My name is Rob Shore, and I am the CEO of ShoreSpeak LLC, which covers a couple of different things. It covers, I carry the Bag magazine, the official magazine of wholesaling. It covers wholesaler masterminds, which is the de facto source of wholesaler information in our industry. We have about 140 different blog posts, 35 radio shows, and we welcome you to check out wholesalermasterminds.com. For a living, I coach wholesalers, I coach divisional managers and senior managers, and I speak to groups of wholesalers across the country in best practices and practice management. Mike, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody who doesn't know about you, which would be hard to believe there is anybody out there that's the case, about yourself.
Well, I'm Mike Brown. For those of you who don't know me, I'm an executive recruiter. Myself and my team and our firm, we're based in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and so for the last 10 years, we've specialized in placing annuity and life insurance wholesalers, sales managers, and executives really in all distribution channels across the country. So our bread and butter comes from placing wholesalers. So of maybe the 450 placements we've made, I would say a little over 300 of those have come from placing distribution professionals. So that's kind of our story, and happy to help out in any way we can, and that's kind of the purpose of this call. Rob, so, do you want to kind of kick this thing off?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So what we thought would be most helpful for you guys today is really to listen in on a conversation. Listen in on a conversation between myself and Mike. And from that, we hope you'll extract a whole lot of information about how you're going to more effectively go about your search, how you're going to effectively manage your transition to find the next opportunity that will serve your career in the most fruitful fashion. So the first topic that we really want to be able to talk about is how to work most effectively with recruiters. So, Mike, can you give us some do's and don'ts? I mean, you know, what should we be aware of when we're you know, working with recruiters? I mean, I do transition coaching. I work with wholesalers that are in transition. And you know, they always ask me, well, you know, for instance, can you give me a list of seven different recruiting firms so I can call them all up and send them all my resume? Will that actually work?
It will work. They'll get your resume, but I think the effectiveness is probably limited. You know,
why?
And what I mean by that, our firm, and I'll probably just start by explaining just how we work and how we're paid, and that'll probably help everyone get a better understanding of how you can best work with us. So MRIs, recruiters, we work on a commission basis. There's two ways. There's the contingent, meaning we get paid once you get placed, and then it's the retained. We get money up front, and then we get the remaining part of our fee once you get placed. And so I think much like you as commission wholesalers, the bulk of our income comes from commission. And so what we try to do is we try to maximize our ability to make a placement and minimize those things or kind of minimize our risk. If your resume is in the hand of seven or more recruiters or three or more recruiters, my likelihood of partnering with you and telling you about my searches is slim to none.
So Mike, that's a really important point that you just said. If you spread yourself out amongst a whole host of recruiting organizations and there are multiple people submitting you for multiple jobs, in the case of a contingent search, and contingent search, again, is where a firm puts out an opening across multiple executive recruiters, if you're being submitted by multiple firms, that's probably not working in your favor, to put it mildly.
I would agree. I mean, in the example that I'll give you, I have a really good friend who at the end of 2010, he lost his job. So he was with the company for 8 years, and he was a divisional vice president. And so he was in a position where he just kind of freaked out a little bit. He blasted his resume to every single recruiter he knew, even if they were not in the industry that he specialized in. He proactively reached out to every chief marketing officer, national sales manager, divisional for life, annuities, funds, REITs, health, I mean, anything you could think of. Long story short, it just cheapened his commodity or cheapened his background to the point where everybody knew him, and it kind of reeked of desperation a little bit. So my encouragement to everybody is just be strategic. You don't have to use me. I'm a recruiter is one kind of club in your golf bag, so to speak. It's one tool for you. But be strategic. Identify one or two recruiters who you like, who you think can help you and who are good at what they do, and work with them while you're, you know, networking and leveraging your existing contacts.
Is it fair to say, Mike, that because I observe this to be true, and I just want to verify it with you, how much weight is there in the notion that the executive recruiter is more interested in somebody that is currently employed than somebody that is not currently employed? Because I know there's probably a fear about that with some folks on the phone.
I mean, that's a tricky question. And at the end of this, I would love maybe some of the sales manager's opinions on it. So if I look at my clientele, I think a lot of it has to do with your sales success. So if you look across the board, maybe the top five wholesalers in each division, regardless if they're employed or unemployed, they're probably going to have a really good likelihood of landing a job relatively quickly. So then if you look at that kind of middle tier of wholesaler and maybe lower tier wholesaler from a ranking perspective, that's where it becomes a little bit more of a challenge, employed versus unemployed. The short answer is the majority of our clients do want employed wholesalers. But the caveat to that is they also are looking for a successful track record.
What's your notion, Mike, about wholesalers? Because, again, this comes up in my transition work with wholesalers. You know, people feel a lot of pressure when they have a situation where they're no longer employed, naturally. And people sometimes feel, you know, pressure to jump out into opportunities that may not be the best fit, but it's the job that presents itself at the time. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because it really is a conundrum, right? I mean, you got a family to feed, you got bills to pay, and, you know, Foonman funds or Foonman annuities comes knocking, and they got a, you know, a B-plus rating, and they got five selling agreements, but, you know, damn it, it's a J-O-B. What do I do in that situation? Any thoughts?
Again, this is merely my opinion, so take it for what it's worth. But I would always encourage to take the bird in the hand. So to be employed versus unemployed in your field or close to your field is always better than sitting on the sidelines. And here's an example. We had kind of in the thick of the crisis in 2009, there was an individual who was a wholesaler who basically was unemployed, took a financial advisor job within a bank. And his counterpart, same thing, hung tight, didn't want to do that, wanted to find a wholesaling gig. That individual that hung out there didn't take the financial advisor job, was unemployed for 9 months. And then the individual who was the financial advisor, he worked for the bank for 9 months, but then picked up a wholesaling gig, a really good wholesaling gig, I think in the 10th month. So you're keeping your saw sharp, you're utilizing your skills, licenses, and all that. So my encouragement, even if it's not the best job, take it.
Do we have one last thought, and then we'll roll into our next topic? So there's a groundswelling emergence of 1099 wholesaling positions. Let me piggyback on Mike's thought with an example of a wholesaler that used a 1099 to stay active, employed, sharpening the saw, showed that he was vital and important within the industry. So this is a wholesaler that worked for a major variable annuity company. He lost his job. He went to work for a 1099 firm, did a nice job at that 1099 firm. And by the way, as a 1099 wholesaler, right, you're completely independent. All the expenses are yours. All the marketing is yours. You know, you have to be Jack and or Jill of all trades. So he actually picked up a bunch of new skills. And then he got a call from an executive recruiter for a job at another tier one company in mutual funds, and that's where he is today. And I know the story beginning to end because he's a client. He hired me while he was a 1099 wholesaler, and he's still my client now that he's back as a W-2 wholesaler. So, Mike, any other kind of, you know, tidbits around this whole notion of 1099 wholesaling?
I think it's great. I mean, for some guys it works. I mean, to your point, it's staying in the industry. But if you can make a go of it, you can make quite a bit of money and have a lot of freedom. So I like it, and it's a way to get back in there. You know, and there's a couple of things I wanted to add just as far as, you know, how to effectively work with a recruiter for you guys. You know, as far as resumes are concerned, that's a topic that it's a question I get asked often. And so from my perspective, I get roughly 60 resumes sent to me a day from a variety of different sources.
Wait, so you said 60. Wait, Mike, Mike, you said 60 a day.
60 a day, yeah.
Wow. Okay, go ahead.
So we're inundated with resumes, and so that's myself and my partners, the recruiters who work with me. And so what I would encourage you to do is I don't need flashy, I don't need different fonts, pictures, anything like that. I just need pure raw data. I want to place you just as much as you want to get placed in a great job. So what I'm trying to extract literally in 30 seconds or less when I read your resume is I need to know your territory, your distribution channel, your products sold, the specific relationships that you maybe extracted the majority of your business from, and then your sales history. So maybe a three-year track record of what your sales were. And for those who are close to or exceeded their goal, love to see sales to goal. As a recruiter, one of the things that kind of makes causes me pause is when I see percentage to goal. Percentage to goal can be a little bit of a yellow flag for me because it either means you didn't hit your goal or a variety of different things. So I like hard data.
All right.
And then the other tip, Rob, just quickly.
Yeah, please.
We don't post any of our searches. So myself and a lot of my peers in the recruiting business, our searches you will not find online. So of the 32 searches that my team is actively working on right now, 12 of those are nowhere to be found online, on a company website, anywhere, searches we're working on.
And by the way, Mike, so that gives us kind of an opening into the next topic in a couple of different places, right? So it's,
yep.
You know, it actually wasn't on our original schedule stuff to talk about, but you kind of opened the door to it, and that's kind of other places to keep your eyes open for openings, right? And one of those places is LinkedIn. So should we blast into the LinkedIn piece?
Yeah, I mean, and obviously you're the pro with LinkedIn. I mean, you are the social media expert, and anybody that's looked at Rob's kind of profile or seen his website knows that he knows how to market himself. You know, Rob, would you mind talking about that? Because maybe 4 or 5 years ago that wasn't necessarily the case, and you've kind of made yourself the expert. How did you do that?
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to think I was an expert at least 5 years ago, but it's just more evident now. let's talk about LinkedIn, all right? So get your pen ready because I want you to make these changes. I've looked at some of your profiles. But before we talk about changing your profile on LinkedIn, let's talk about how important it is. Here's the acid test, okay? And if you're not familiar with the origin of acid tests, just a little bit of trivia, because who doesn't need trivia, right? And especially on a Friday morning. Do you know that the gold miners back in the 1800s actually used to use nitric acid on rocks to determine if under the rock was actually gold, so they didn't throw the actual rock away before they tested it? That's where acid test comes from. So when you go to the cocktail party this weekend, or we talk to your buddies or your girlfriends, tell them the acid test story, because you need those tidbits on a Friday morning. Mike, talk to me about when you are scoping a candidate, between the time the name is uttered and you're looking them up on LinkedIn, how much elapsed time has taken place?
Probably 3 seconds or less. Here's an example. Sean Morris gave me 2 leads 2 days ago. While I was on the phone with Sean, as soon as I wrote them down, and then I typed them into LinkedIn, and I checked them out online, and I checked out their LinkedIn profile.
Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, Mike is not an aberration. LinkedIn becomes the de facto source for executive recruiters, HR representatives, a lot of hiring managers. Not everyone is adept. Not every hiring manager is adept at LinkedIn. But more times than not, we're heading there first to check you out. You call me for coaching services, first place I go is LinkedIn. I want to learn more about you. So let's talk about how are you going to build the most effective LinkedIn profile possible. Get your pens ready. The first is the importance of the completeness of the profile. Don't shortchange any of the opportunities available to market yourself because LinkedIn gives you all of these different categories to work with. So let's talk right at the top. Make sure you have a picture. Make sure that your picture is not a picture of you and the kids on Christmas vacation wearing silly hats. That's great for Facebook. It's great to share with the family. I'm sure it's a warm, cuddly memory, and I'm not denigrating it at all. Doesn't belong on Facebook. Facebook is a suit and tie network of professionals. LinkedIn is a cocktail party. Let's go ahead and make sure that we present ourselves on LinkedIn as the suit and tie network that it is. So get yourself a picture. If you don't have one, find one. Put one up there. When you're typing out any of your information, it really drives me crazy and shows some level of lack of caring about how they present themselves when I see someone who goes the all caps or all lowercase route. Remember that you're writing for a professional website. And so we'd like to see that your representation of yourself is equally professional. So write it as you would a resume, knowing that there's lots of eyeballs coming to this. The next point is, if you happen to be at your computer and looking at a LinkedIn profile, any profile, or looking at yours, you'll notice in that top box, at the bottom of the top box, it says public profile, and there's a URL there. And if you have not yet changed the URL, I welcome you to change it, because the proper URL is www.linkedin.com/in/your-first-and-last-name. And you can change that under settings. You can change all of this information quite easily. They've made it pretty simple and intuitive. So what I want you to do is change that profile, just because it's easier to cut and paste. It's easier for people to find you. We don't want people to have to work to find you. There's no reason why they should have to work. Let's write a proper summary. So you have the opportunity to write a summary. Let's make sure that that summary says what you want it to say. A little bit about what you feel you're good at, what you feel your strengths are, what you feel your major accomplishments have been. It's not too dissimilar from a summary that you'd put at the top of a resume. But do me a favor, especially for wholesalers, write it in first person. So when you see a wholesaler, you know, a frontline person, right, wholesaler or any other type of sales professional, when you see a frontline contributor writing in third person, speaking, you know, someone else has written the profile for them, speaks about them third person, personally, it's a turnoff. I want to see the my and the I, right? Along those lines, I've reviewed profiles for some of my clients, and it's just written with eyes. So find different ways to say stuff, right? If you look at one paragraph and it's got 17 different eyes in it, let's figure other ways to get at the same information. I want you to use bullet points. I want you to figure out how to give the information in bullet point fashion. And the reason I want you to figure out how to do that is, think about when you go to any website. Tell me if you think you are a reader, as you would be a magazine that you're holding in your hand or a novel that you're holding in your hand, or if you're a scanner. We're all scanners on the internet. So if we're all scanners on the internet, how do we make sure that your information is consumed as easily as possible to the eye? Put it in bullet format. Question is, how do you make bullets on LinkedIn? Because you can put line after line after line, and that's great. That's better than, you know, one full paragraph of me trying to have to extract information. But how do you put in bullets? Let me give you a little secret. It's called an alt code, A-L-T, alt code. If you go to Google and type in alt code, you'll find out how to do it. Let me give you the one that I use all the time to put in a bullet. A bullet is, you look at your computer keyboard and there's an alt key, and you hold down the alt key and at the same time you type in 0149, and it creates a black bullet. So now you can do alt 0149, now comes up the bullet, number one wholesaler in the division 6 consecutive years, dynamite. Now it's scannable, it's readable, it's easy for me to get at. I want you to, under your individual experience at your companies, tell me what the achievements are. I want to know. Now, Mike said, you know, he's a little suspect, red flag or yellow flag, not necessarily red, of percent to goal. Give it all to me. You never know. That's Mike's opinion, and I respect it greatly. But at the same time, other folks might be, hey, man, he was 350% of goal, and he did $150 million year upon year after year. Great. We could put that package together and go, that's a hell of a wholesaler. So give me not just a oratory of what you've done. Tell me de facto what it was. Number one in all the key accounts that I served for the last 5 years. Number three wholesaler in the division. Number one, two, or three in the division for 5 consecutive years. Opened up 7 new accounts. Was the chairman's club for 5 consecutive. Whatever it is, whatever those things are, don't be shy. Boast about yourself, because no one else is going to do it in this setting, certainly. Do yourself a favor and put your contact information in the summary section. Nothing ticks us off when we're trying to get in touch with you, any of us, anybody, colleagues, executive recruiters, friends. That's the whole notion of social media, right? How do I find this person? And especially if you're looking for a J-O-B. Let's make sure that it's not hard to find you. Put your contact information in the summary section. Give me your phone number. Give me your email address. Mike, how much will you go searching for a contact information just on a cursory basis? I know if you really want to find somebody, buddy, you'll find them. But, you know, how frustrating is it when you can't find somebody?
Yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, because then I have to employ either one of my interns or I employ a firm in India to search down contact information. And so then but what that means to you is it just delays the process. I mean, if I want to talk to you right away, I can just pick up the phone and call you if I see your number. If not, we're at least 2 or 3 days out until I get that number and I can call you.
And potentially, unless you are a hot, 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 hot candidate, which I hope you all are, he's going to move on to somebody else. Let's talk about skills. There's a whole section for you to talk about specialties and to talk about skills. So under specialties, tell people what you're good at. In skills, it's all keyword driven. So you have the opportunity to call out what those skills are. Series 7, variable annuities, mutual funds, hedge funds. Under specialties, it could be VA specialist, retirement plan, CHFC, CFA, et cetera, et cetera. All the way down at the bottom of the profile, there's a place for personal information. Give me your contact information there again, please. And then at the bottom, the very last section, is contact. Give it to me again. I know it sounds like overkill. Let's overkill it. This is not the right time to be shy about who you are, how great you are, or how I'm supposed to find you. The last thing I want to talk about within LinkedIn is the notion of recommendations. I just had a client yesterday ask me what my feeling was about recommendations. So before I give my opinion, because we want to get you back to work, let's get the opinion of the person who reads the recommendation. Mike, what's your opinion of recommendations?
I'll try to tone it down, but I don't read them. But, again, like I told you, Rob, I am trying to find the information that I want as quickly as possible, and I'm making the assumption that if somebody's giving you a recommendation, that they're going to give you a good recommendation.
So it's safe to say, Mike, if you see a recommendation from me and you're trying to get a bit of my background, you might email this person and say, hey, you know, you wrote this about Rob. Can you expound on it a little bit, or may I talk to you about that? That's not beyond the scope of possibility, right?
No, that's not. That's definitely not.
Okay.
I mean, and this is where we may differ, and I think that's absolutely okay, because I think they're good for searchability too. But I think the backdoor reference is more powerful. So if myself and the wholesaler candidate have a mutual acquaintance, or I know somebody that knows that person, that reference is more powerful to me than the direct reference. And I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm just saying that these recommendations are good from a variety of different sources.
So I'll tell you what I told my client yesterday. I said, like my old Jewish grandmother used to say, it couldn't hurt. So if you have 5, 7, 10 folks that can say good things about your capabilities, it couldn't hurt. If somebody doesn't feel like Mike and looks at it and goes, you know, I want to see some recommendations, fine. Find 5, 7, 10 people to give you recommendations and make sure they give you recommendations about something that's current. If it's about how you were a fantastic bank teller circa 1978, like I was, who cares? But if it shows that you were a great leader of folks, drove success within budget, that you had a unique opportunity to uncover business, that you had the ability to create a raft of new sellers, you know, those are the things we want to see when it comes to you as a professional today. So I hope you had a chance to scribble those down, and I invite you to go back and rework your LinkedIn profile, because I'm telling you, I've seen a lot of you guys, and thank you for joining Wholesaler Masterminds on LinkedIn, Wholesaler Connect on LinkedIn, and Investment Wholesalers of America on LinkedIn. And when I see you guys joining, I'm looking at some of your profiles, and some of them need a lot of work. And so what you need to know is people are looking, and it's pretty effortless to take it from where it is today to a more enhanced and robust place. So, Mike, let's talk a little bit about this whole notion of leveraging your network to find openings. We're going to do that. We're going to do the next few topics in about 10 minutes, and then we got to open it up for Q&A for these guys. So let's talk a bit about leveraging your network. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in this hopefully will resonate with you guys because you're all salespeople, but my encouragement to everybody on this call is to treat your search as if it was your territory loop or rotation. So think about what space do you want to be in. Do you want to be in VAs? Do you want to be in funds? Do you want to be in REITs? Whatever that is, target that space. And then furthermore, make a list of target companies that you would like to work for, tier one, tier two, tier three. And then from there, build out a list of everybody you know at those companies or people you know who know those companies, much like what Rob was saying. So, and I would treat it just like my search. I would treat it like how I treat my business here, you know, systematic and strategic.
You know, two things come to mind when you say that, Mike. Treat your job search like a job, right? Treat your job search like
Absolutely.
A job. You've got to spend the hours on this. It's not fun. It's not pleasant, but you have to. And then the second thing is when we talked about LinkedIn, go find new contacts. Really, really important. So
yep.
One of my clients that I work with, when he joined me, he had 32 contacts. He now has 169. Is that important? No. What's important is what he found when he started connecting with people. And he had three interviews. He got displaced as a wholesaler. He got three interviews in the course of a month. And the idea was he was just reaching out to people. And here's a really important notion about that. I have felt this way, okay? When I first started down this path of connecting through social media, I thought, you know, man, this is somebody I haven't spoken to in 5 years. You know, they weren't really that close. And maybe I'll feel a little sheepish about connecting with them because, you know, we weren't necessarily friends. Screw it. If you know somebody and you think you can have an opportunity of connecting with them, connect with them, especially on LinkedIn, especially when you're looking for a job, because you don't know where it might lead. And once you have that connection built, you can now look at their connections. So then what happens? You get wind of a job at XYZ mutual fund company or XYZ insurance company, and you can look through contacts and say, oh, wow, all right, Rob knows the national sales manager at XYZ. I wonder if he wouldn't mind saying something nice about me because we're contacts, or if he could possibly send a note to that person that I'd like to speak to them. Utilize the power of what's available to you.
Absolutely. You know, another quick tip for everybody is, so we all know people who are recently affected by downsizings. So my encouragement is to think of your immediate network and think of your extended network and think about those people who were unemployed who now are employed. So most recently was Hancock that laid off people a couple months ago. A lot of those wholesalers have found jobs. So if anybody knows Hancock wholesalers that they're friends with, call those guys and figure out where they've interviewed. And then you can start to make a list. Some of those jobs have closed. Some of them are still open. But if you can begin that exercise of thinking about people you know who were unemployed, recently found jobs, who did they talk to?
All right, Mike, let's touch on interviewing techniques real quick, shall we? So,
absolutely.
So part of what you do, right, is you're going to coach people before the interview to make sure that in addition to the skills that they bring to interviewing, you're going to give them some additional coaching. In my work, I give them additional coaching. But what? Give me some do's and don'ts, some tidbits. What do you got up your sleeve interviewing-wise?
I think just number one when it comes to interviewing is know your audience. You know their style, know what they want, do your background and figure it out. And then that way it can dictate your approach to them. I just had this conversation with this morning about this. It's just we were talking about the notion of follow-up, and we'll get to this in a second, but his opinion and my opinion differed. And so what's important is when Jeff is hiring somebody, that's whose opinion counts, not necessarily my opinion. So just know your audience and mirror their style. If they're aggressive and energetic, you'll be aggressive and energetic. If they're laid back, you be laid back. You know, unless you had something to say on that, I was going to go on to the next point, Rob, if you wanted to interject.
I definitely have something to say about that because it's an important point. When I used to be president of Allstate Distributors and interviewed, and before that national sales manager, interviewed wholesalers relentlessly, nothing would hack me off more than the wholesaler that knew nothing about my product and nothing about my firm. And I know to some of you that might be like, crazy talk. How could somebody walk into an interview and not have done their homework? Oh, my God, you'd be surprised. Which, by the way, speaks to how easy it is to jump to the top of the list. And in this day and age of 2012, with all the information that's available, if you don't go out and spend time on that firm's website and get to know what their value proposition, who the senior leaders are, what their product suite is, what their marketing program is about, get a sense of what their culture is. If you don't do that ahead of time, shame on you.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's my number one point is just preparation. Know everything about the person or the company you're going to be meeting with.
All right. And you wanted to – go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, there's a couple other things as far as interviewing techniques. I would just say, you know, everybody's interested in finding a job. Be enthusiastic, but don't be desperate. It's that fine line of being interested but not being desperate, essentially, and not throwing yourself at these people. And so an example of that is, I guess we had, and again, we'll come to this in a second, but we had a scenario where that same guy who was unemployed, who's now been unemployed for a year, who sent his resume out to everybody, he does overkill follow-up. He does emails. He does cards. He does calls. He does repeated calls. If he doesn't hear back, he'll call again. So I would just say, don't be desperate. Be interested, but don't be desperate.
You know, I want to piggyback on that relative to LinkedIn. You, be careful, please. I got an email yesterday. It's from, you know, I have about 1,500 connections, and this is from somebody that I know of, but I don't necessarily know, and that's okay, right? Because I just want to connect with everybody, especially with the job, the work that I do. And he wrote this three-paragraph email about how we are living in unprecedented times, and, you know, nowhere is that more evident than the employment market, and things are really looking, you know, very difficult in his area. And he blasted this to his entire network, asking for leads because his pipeline had dried up. And in my personal opinion, that is not the way to go about it. That, for me, back to Mike's comment about desperation, and he might be, and I have genuine empathy for the position that he's in, but in my humble opinion, that's not the way to tackle it. The way to tackle it is much more intimate, one-on-one. You don't have to blast to the entire universe that you're in this unfortunate position, in this gentleman's case, of his pipeline having dried up. Mike, you got thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think we're actually referencing the same guy in two different scenarios.
Well, there you go. Apparently you got it too.
the other thing I'll just share shortly, and we'll move on to our next point, is ask great questions. The common theme among our clients who are the nationals and the chief marketing officers are the caliber of questions that our candidates ask typically are the things that differentiate them among the competition.
What a great point. No, I mean, I'm just agreeing with you. It's a great point because it goes with the homework piece, right? Because if you do the homework,
right,
you're able to develop really insightful questions. People that used to interview with me, and I'd be, do you have any questions? No, I think I got it. Sounds like a great opportunity. When will you be making a decision? No, that's not what I – make up a question. Even if you're not interested, make up a question.
And don't you think it shows lack of interest when they don't have questions? That's my perception, at least.
Oh, it drives me crazy. Figure out a couple of three questions, even if you already know the answers, figure them out.
And, again, this is something that I can email out. If you guys shoot me an email after this, I'll send you a list. There's 30 questions that we've developed that you can ask, and you'll ask them in your own style, so it won't seem like everybody in the world is asking the same questions.
You know what we can do, Mike, to make it easy for these guys, what we can do is we'll figure out a place on my website to go ahead and put the recording. We'll put your questions as an attachment as well, and then we can send out the whole thing as a link. And then perhaps management can send out that link to everybody. How does that sound?
Perfect, perfect. Do you want to hit on the next topic, just appropriate follow-up and closing skills?
Yeah, I think we talked about that. So a couple other nuances, and Mike and I talked about this yesterday. I'm an old-school believer in snail mail and have great respect for the notion of how quickly decisions are made, and I say that in some – quotation marks, because some companies move terribly slow, but the speed of communication today sometimes makes snail mail not as effective as we'd like it to be. So what does that mean relative to follow-up? People will say, well, should I do a handwritten note or should I do an email? And I think Mike and I agreed yesterday the answer is yes. You should do both.
Yep.
To do the email immediately that says, Rob, it was such a pleasure to meet with you. I truly find that the topics that we discussed were very synergistic, your needs versus my desires. I look forward to the opportunity to advance our discussion. You know, In case you need it, here's my contact information again at the bottom. Whatever it is, love and kisses, Rob, right? Sign it that. And then follow it up with a note if you like. And, Mike, what was your point about that if you just go snail mail?
If you just go snail mail and not email, I think business moves at such a speed today, that you're going to miss an opportunity and they will think that you were not interested or sent a note at all. I mean, decisions are made in a day or less.
Okay. So we want to be able to follow up. We want to be able to close. And I think there's a fine blend between using the new media ways and the most expeditious ways versus using old school ways and finding a nice combination of the two. Mike, do you have an opinion about using text as follow-up?
I personally love it. I think, if you know that that hiring manager uses text and utilizes it, absolutely use it, because I think it does two things. One, it's immediate, and number two, it's kind of it's more casual and more low-key, and so therefore you can build a rapport on a different level. So I'm all for it.
I think what you said at the beginning is really, really important to me, because where I'm going to differ with you is make sure you know that that hiring manager operates in that mode. Because think about it. If you've got a bunch of hiring managers out there that may not ever use text, and all of a sudden this thing shows up on their phone and they're like, what the hell is this? So,
yep.
Again, you got to make sure you know your audience, as Mike said. Just make sure you're fitting your follow-up to the actual person that has been doing the interview. Mike, I do have a question about follow-up, and then we got to open this up for questions, right? Because we got only about 15 minutes left. What happens when there's an HR representative involved in the mix? How do I follow up with them? Do I follow up with them? Maybe my first interview was going to be with HR, and then they're going to shoot me over to see the hiring manager. Should I pay attention to HR in the process?
Absolutely. I think the worst thing that you can do is discount their position in the process. And so, like anything, you have to treat the HR person like you would treat the hiring manager, saying thank yous, ask them questions, and try to engage them as much as you can. Think of the HR person as a conduit, because if you treat them poorly, that's definitely going to get back to the hiring manager.
Super important point. Some guys will go in and they'll be like, yeah, whatever, it's just HR, and then, turn on the bright light when they get to the hiring manager. That's a big swing and a miss. Because you're making a mistake if you don't think that those two entities are talking to one another aggressively to determine was there continuity in this person's performance
right.
when they came in to see us. All right, Mike,
absolutely.
We're out of time as far as the dialogue goes. If you have questions, the way that you're going to ask them is star six. So if you have questions, please press star six. You'll come on the line, and please ask us any questions that you have. Star six if you have questions.
And actually, to get started, if you're on the line, can we get your opinion and your take on texting follow-up and what's the appropriate follow-up after an interview? What's too much? What's too little?
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I can.
Hey, first and foremost, both you and Rob, thank you very much for a great call. Very informative, very insightful, and I know everybody on this call got a lot out of it, including me, so I want to thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
As far as follow-up, and, Mike, this is something you and I talked about this morning. I really kind of have two thoughts on it. First of all, I don't care if they text me. I've learned to text in the last several months because most of my wholesalers do it. So it's a great, easy way to communicate. So I don't mind that. If somebody is very, very qualified, has got a tremendous track record, they're a top one, two, or three wholesaler in their previous role, and they follow up with me very, very consistently and are very aggressive, I like that because it shows that the reason they were successful as a wholesaler is because they were aggressive in their follow-up. They were tenacious in trying to get the business done, which showed in their results, and I like to see that with me as well. On the contrary, if somebody was not very successful and was kind of trying to hide behind their numbers, percentages of goals and things that you mentioned, and they follow up with me constantly, it shows a desperation, and it turns me off completely. So I kind of have two schools of thought on it based on the quality of the person who's following up with me.
That's perfect. Thanks for that.
Absolutely.
So the moral is don't be a bad wholesaler.
Yeah. if you suck, go do something different.
Other questions, star six. We have until the bottom of the hour to do this, so please get your questions in. Star six to ask a question.
First off, thanks again for the call. I've taken some great notes, and this has been very informative. Back to the LinkedIn profile, I haven't had a chance to update mine yet, and based on what you said on the call, I need to get on that right away, but is there a way to block your profile until you have a chance to update it appropriately?
So you have a profile out there now?
Right. I have a profile out there now. It hasn't been updated as of yet. And is there a way to, you know, just check a setting or something where it says this profile isn't available to view, it's in the midst of being updated, something to that effect?
Okay. So before I answer that, because I don't know the answer, I have to do a quick bit of homework on it, why would you want to block it while you're updating it?
Well, I haven't had the chance to get it updated as of yet, and maybe the better thing to do is just get on it right away and get it updated, but I haven't really organized all the different highlights that I want to update it with.
So let me suggest this. Rather than blocking it, and again, I don't know the answer. I could find out the answer, but I won't take the time to do it on this call. Rather than blocking it, what I would recommend that you do is just if you don't have time to do it all in one, you know, smooth operation, if you will, then do it in chunks. So I'm seeing that you've got your first one is internal wholesaler, Sun Life Financial Distributors. Write out what you want to put under that for your summary. Bang, put it in. It's a cut and a paste, right? So just cut and paste it back in. Do your alt codes for your bullets if that's what you want to do. And maybe you won't have time to do your John Hancock experience until tomorrow or the next day. That's okay. You know, in other words, you don't want to leave it in a untidy state, but at the same time, you might as well leave yourself out there rather than taking it down, because, you know, life happens. You might take it down, and then, you know, who knows what happens, and you're not out there for another week or two, so we don't want that to happen. So I would recommend changing it as you go rather than deactivating it. That's my opinion.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
How are you?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You mentioned on the LinkedIn profile changing your specific website or URL, I think you said?
I did.
I looked at yours. I tried to just change mine to be like yours, but for some reason it's not taking it for me. What am I doing wrong?
Okay, so we'll walk through this as quickly as we can. Up at the top of the page, you're going to click on Profile. When you click on Profile, you're going to click on Edit Profile.
Got it.
When you click on Edit Profile, you're going to go down to where it says Public Profile in your profile.
Got it.
And it says HTTP, and then there's that extended URL.
Yes.
Next to it is a button that says Edit.
Yep.
Click on Edit.
Okay.
All right. And inside of – hang on. It just threw me a curveball. Oh, sorry. Out to the right-hand side.
Upper right.
Out to the right-hand side, it says Customize Your Public Profile.
Okay.
Down below that, it says Your Public Profile URL.
Yes.
It says your current URL, and it shows that extended one.
Yep.
Click under Customize Your Public Profile URL.
Got it.
That's where you change it.
All right. So just you said www.linkedin.
Just all you have to do in that case is just put in your name.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Right, because everything before it is already filled in. You see in gray, it already says www.linkedin.com/in/. You just put in your name.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Other questions? Anything else? Mike, should we put a wrap on it?
I think so, buddy. I think so. Thank you, everybody, for your time today. We definitely appreciate it. We'll get you that information in some format.
Absolutely. And from my perspective, I wish you the greatest success in transitioning to your next career opportunity. If I can be of any service to you, please let me know. Go to wholesalermasterminds.com. Read the posts. There's stuff in there that will assist you. There's also 35 radio shows, so there's good content in there to not only keep your saw sharp in transition, but also help you as you secure your next position. So with that, we wish you a good weekend. Thanks.